Good morning. Court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. That's right. It's your 1 hour. It's your hour to ask your legal questions. You got questions? I've got answers. Joined in the studio by my co-host, the one and only, the inimitable. There you go, David. David.
Good morning.
Rappaport.
Good morning. How are you? Hey, thank you, my minions.
There you go. It's always good to have minions.
Minions are good, yes.
Especially around the holidays.
Yeah, right?
Hey.
Elves. There it is.
Big explosion, and we're ready to start the show. We're ready to rock and roll. Hey, guess what?
What?
We have some news to talk
about
today.
Oh, we always have some news.
You know, but before we get on to the news, we're going to be losing a bunch of our judges come December 31st.
Mm, really? With Common Pleas?
Cool. Common Pleas.
Who are we losing? Do you know offhand?
Judge Moss, for one.
Mm.
Yeah.
No comment.
Okay. They're getting too old.
Hey, she's been a
tireless hard worker.
I will comment, yes. Yeah, she has been a tireless worker is right. That's a good way of putting it. She's always there doing her thing. So you got to give her props for that.
Yep.
Can't say I always agree with her, but then again.
Who do that, you?
No, I mean, it would be weird if I always agreed with everything she said.
Yeah, they're getting too old. So says the law.
So really, so Moss, who else? Because she runs everything over there. Almost.
I know. Hey, folks, if you're listening to David and I, you'd like to ask your legal question. You know the number. It should be tattooed on the inside of your eyes.
Of your eyes, okay.
Okay. 215-227-2727. If you need legal representation in any way, shape, or form, that's the best number to start with. 215-227-2727. And Sunday mornings, that gets you into the studio where David and I are. Where we like to share the microphone and talk about legal things that are going on in the world and in your home. All right. There you go. You got the number.
There you go. 215-227-2727.
Yes.
We already have calls.
We
had calls before we started.
We lined them up. Rebecca from Lindenwald, New Jersey. Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. Oh, Rebecca.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. You can turn your radio down. And what's your question, Rebecca?
My question is, I was in a car accident a couple of weeks ago, and my insurance, because I had good insurance listening to you guys, basically covered everything. But I was wondering if I could regain any recourse from the other person, because it was completely deemed the other person's fault. Deductible and money that I had to put out for another vehicle.
Of course.
Yes. All of the any out-of-pocket expenses are recoverable. Yes. The answer is yes. But if your insurance has paid you more and let me preface it by saying and you were not injured in the accident, then more likely than not, your insurance company will pursue the deductible as well as the monies they've laid out. So if you had $10,000 in damage with a $500 deductible,
they're going to
the insurance company is going to try to recover their $10,000. They're going to take their $9,500 they spent and then give you back your $500. More likely than not, you should check with your insurance company in these instances to make sure that they are pursuing your deductible.
Okay, but aside from the deductible, like the extra money that I had to put out for the rental, even though I had rental coverage, but I'm a tall woman and I'm 7 months pregnant, so putting me in a Fiat just was not going to happen.
No, I don't blame you one bit.
The extra money that I had to put out for another vehicle and, the down payment for another vehicle and all that, those things.
Yes.
That probably will not be
pursued by your insurance company.
Why couldn't you just get a Fiat with like a a moonroof. You stick your head through that and drive. No, I'm just kidding.
I saw that on, yeah, that was an episode on the Flintstones when I was a kid.
When I was the bottoms out to, but no, you would have to pursue that yourself, I would believe.
And if it happened in New Jersey, what you would do is you would pursue your claim for both. I guess if you're going to do one, you might as well do both. You'd pursue your claim for your deductible as well as your out-of-pocket expenses in the district court, in the district that you reside or that the accident occurred in, whichever is more convenient for you.
I mean, in all honesty, I think the way to handle it before you do that would be, if that's your only claim, is to find out the insurance information and the claim number and the adjuster from the other company, the company of the vehicle that caused it. And you can probably find that out from your insurance adjuster. And just call them directly and say, look, if you don't give me this money back, I'll send you all the bills here. Then I'm going to make a claim in small claims court. They'll probably pay you.
Probably, if it's as clear as you claim it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, if they admit it, they'll pay you.
So that's our advice for you, Rebecca. And good luck with the baby.
Thank you
very much. Thanks for watching and listening to Court Radio.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.
There you go.
There we go. Hey.
Well, we got other callers we'll get to in a minute.
All right,
folks, if you're listening, 215-227-2727. That's what gets you into the studio here. We'll kick around your legal issues. David, on a SEPTA platform, he accidentally, supposedly, discharged his weapon.
Okay, and that's a story I did not pick up here.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were doing it because it was boring, but okay.
Well, we have to start out. We're starting out slow.
Is that the story? Gun owner? what's the ba-dum-bum moment of that story?
The ba-dum-bum is you shouldn't be carrying guns on SEPTA platforms and discharging them.
Yeah, okay. Words of wisdom from Dean Weitzman.
The man turned himself in, thank God nobody was seriously injured, but there was somebody injured by some shrapnel.
Yeah, carrying a gun that way, obviously not knowing how to carry it is worse than even just carrying it. But anyway, moral of the story, don't carry a gun on the SEPTA platform and shoot people.
Yes.
Okay,
There you go.
There you go. Words of wisdom.
Yeah. That was 215-227-2727. Let's talk to Steven from Chestnut Hill. Hello, Steven.
Hey, hello.
Hey, you're on live and on Court Radio. What's your question?
My question is about if I had a case and it was dismissed, but it's still in my record, how do I go about getting expunged?
The old expunge question.
Expunge question.
We love that one. Yes, we get it a lot.
First of all, you more likely than not, you hire an attorney, because a petition has to be filed, and you probably will need some help with that. So if it's just an arrest record, then it is expungible, but you're going to need to retain an attorney usually, and you file a petition. Maybe there's a hearing, maybe not. Depends on whether the district attorney objects to the expungement. Usually, I would say if it's just an arrest, probably not, but you never know. In any event, that's expungible, but you have to retain counsel to do that usually, and you can certainly give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727. We have attorneys.
Same number.
Yep, okay. Same number. We have attorneys in the office who have handled numerous expungements, so you'll be in good hands, and they'll get it taken care of for you fairly promptly.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks for calling, Stephen. Have a great Sunday.
Okay. You too.
All right.
All right. We're two for two.
Two for two.
Two for.
All right.
All right. Next call?
No, go ahead. Story.
You want a story?
Yeah. Give me a story.
I think this one's going to be better than yours.
All right.
This one's it's out of New York, so you know it's going to be good. Long Island, actually. This is interesting. A deli owner and his son. They're deli. They sell lottery tickets. They sell a scratch-off ticket to a guy who doesn't speak English well. The guy scratches it off and hands it to them and says, "What happened here?" Well, it was a $1 million winning ticket. They promptly handed him $1,000 and said, "Congratulations, you won $1,000." And then tried to, cash in the ticket themselves for the $1 million. I guess he figured out that he won more than $1,000. So now they are in jail waiting or been arraigned waiting for charges on larceny, grand larceny. And what I think I heard on the radio, it was $7,500 bail for each of them.
All right.
So $1,000 turned into $15,000 for those two in a negative way and a criminal record. So good job, guys.
Yeah, it's Kareem Jaghab. Jaghab and his...
No, he was the one who won.
Nope. He's not. He's not the victim. He's the perpetrator. We call him the perp here on Court Radio. Boom.
It's, oh, right. You're
it's
right.
Kareem and Nabil Jaghab.
Yep.
And
I'm sorry, they tried to give him $10,000.
Yeah, 10 G's.
Okay.
10 G's for $1 million ticket, not a bad deal.
No.
I tried that with Kyle yesterday. It worked.
So his attorney says that it was a simple, they tried to blame it on the machine.
Yeah.
The machine, even though the scratch-off ticket shows what you won, they tried to say, oh, the machine told me it was $10,000.
Right. Well, they put the bet decimal in the wrong place.
Good defense.
Yeah. Couple wrong defenses.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Mm. I heard, in a related story, I heard on the news this weekend that a $16 million lottery ticket, I'm not sure where in this country, finally, the year just passed yesterday. Person never claimed. Somebody bought a $16 million winning ticket and let it go.
Yeah. Usually that probably means they trashed it.
Yeah, they didn't even know they won.
They didn't even know they won.
Oh, can you imagine? It's a life-changing event.
Yeah.
It probably was you.
Could have been me, but, it could have also been a life-changing event in the reverse,
True, you never know.
You never know. A lot of those people who go on to win millions don't know how to handle the cash as well as you do.
I'll try and figure it out.
Yeah.
I'd like that problem. It's a great problem to have.
And they end up, with relatives calling and
right.
All kinds of crazy insanity.
Another thing I'll deal with. I'll take the calls.
Let's talk to Vicky from New Jersey, who's got a question about cyber stalking, David.
Ooh, okay.
Vicky.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to Court Radio.
Oh, thank you. And, Chris Hansen from NBC used to do those stories about the people, the lottery people who scam the customers. Remember that?
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
We might start that.
Sounds like he needs to get the camera crew again, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
So, Vicky,
right.
What?
Anyway, listen, yeah. my situation is this. I am in a fight to save my home. I've been in a fight for about 5 years. And I'm going back and forth with the bank. Anyway, long story short, there was an agent from a well-known real estate company up here who was, shall I use the term, eager to get the sale to the point that she actually lied to the bank and told them that I had agreed to a cash for keys deal that I did not. I found that out, but then she started cyber stalking me. She started inviting me to join social media, and she kept doing it, and she kept doing it. She did it like 15 times. So I want to know, is that considered cyber stalking? I never responded to any of them. I kept all of them in a file, though. I do plan on going to the district attorney up here in New York to see if any criminal charges can be filed against her, because there's not any gal pal going on here. We are definitely adversaries because she has lied on me repeatedly to the bank. So that's what my question was.
Okay, well, I you know what? You're talking New York law on cyber stalking, and I'm just not 100% sure. But I would say that you're on the right track, because I think that contacting the district attorney's office on these types of matters is the first place to start. If it is considered harassment, and there are civil and criminal harassment regulations in almost every jurisdiction, I would imagine, and I'm sure there's one that covers your jurisdiction, you may be able to bring a civil action against her if the district attorney's not willing to file criminal charges. But I would start with the district attorney, because it's certainly the best way to go about it. And I think it also makes a record for you in the future should it continue to escalate. And, I think in all regard, that's the best course of action. So you've already undertaken the best course of action. But I do have a question for you.
Yes.
What is keys for, what did you say, keys for cash?
It's called cash for keys or something like that. Would they when there is a foreclosure proceeding that takes place, the bank tries to offer you money to leave the premises.
I invented that. I invented that.
Did you?
I did.
Well,
I,
no,
you
did. Covering your neck.
No, you invented it in the apartment.
Yeah, in the apartment scheme.
For some folks, but for me, it's not.
I understand
they
totally.
They couldn't pay me enough to leave my home.
Gotcha. Oh really? Okay? Oh really? They couldn't pay you enough. Wait a minute. I'm going to get
in New York law that says that I have to take it.
All right. I'm going to give you $300,000 to leave your home. You leaving?
Get me out fast enough. She has decided to try all kinds of other nefarious activities.
Why don't we leave her on the whole time? And we'll just do the radio show. We'll keep pulling up the
mic. I'm going to give you $300,000 to leave your home. You leaving?
Nope. This is a family home. I've been here for almost 50 years, and I ain't going. Sorry.
A million.
That's ridiculous. you have gone beyond the assessed property value of properties up in this area.
All right. Thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a blessed Sunday up in New York, I guess. You know, David, we're reaching far and wide.
Yeah, we got a couple of New York stories already, right?
Yeah, we have New York stories, and we have a woman who won't leave for 300 Gs. And a million, she thinks.
It's the principle.
Yeah, it's the principle. I got an email.
Let's
break on the stories for a second.
Yeah.
You know, we tell people to email us. An email, and here it is. Yeah, Kyle loves me today. He's giving me the thumbs up.
You like that?
Yeah.
We did it all on his own, too.
Yeah, I'm a producer.
Give him a little. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, here it is. I purchased a vehicle today, and it seemed to be fine. A few hours later, it wouldn't start. I contacted the dealership, but no one was around to speak with me.
They disappeared.
with his cash. I'd like to know, is there anything I can do? David?
Well, we would want to know, as we've always mentioned, what were the circumstances of buying the car? In other words, was it as is? Was there some warranty on it? All those different kinds of things. But the first thing is it a dealership that's still in business? Because if it is, you know, I can't tell from that question whether they're gone and disappeared or whether
no, he bought it today. He bought it the day he called me, and then that very day, couldn't start the car.
Well, call the next day and try and get in touch with them. But ultimately, if they tell you to pound sand, it's going to be an issue of what the contract was in buying it. If it was as is, you're going to have a difficult time, you know.
Absolutely.
Saying that you didn't get what you bargained for. But if it was, are there some type of warranty or it didn't say as is, then, you know, implicitly everyone is thinking they're going to buy a car that works at the very least. So if there's some latent, you know, some problem that you didn't know of that they didn't tell you about, you might have an argument there.
You might.
But we need to, it's a contract. We need to know what the contract said.
Yeah, and it was very cold yesterday, and if the battery was a little on the weak side, it just may need a battery, but the bottom line is that, buyer beware applies to the cars.
Well, you bring up a good point, though.
To the nth degree.
You would have the burden, the buyer, to show what it is that's wrong with the car, so you would have to figure that out. Take it somewhere to figure out what's wrong with it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Deborah from Alani on line one. Deborah, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Deborah.
I'm calling because I am questioning what happened with my father. He was in a nursing home, and when I went to visit him once, they said there was a little problem going on with his foot. Nothing to worry about. I looked at his foot. He had two blackened toes, but they kept saying it wasn't nothing to worry about. He wound up going to the hospital. They kept him in there for a couple of days, like 3 days, and sent him back to the nursing home. But later, his foot became gangrene. It affected all his major organs, and my father died. So I feel, that between the nursing home and the hospital, they contributed to his death. He wound up, he had dead sores, but his foot was the major problem. But they kept saying it wasn't nothing to worry about.
When did this happen?
He died in October. It started in September.
Of this year?
Of this year, yes.
Okay. Well, Dean?
Well, here's what has to happen. Whenever you have a case such as this, a nursing home negligence case or a medical negligence case, the thing that the attorneys are going to want to do first is to gather up all the medical records to evaluate or determine whether there was a breach of the standard of care. And so you have medical records at the nursing home and you have medical records at the hospital that need to be gotten, obtained, and then reviewed by other doctors to see if his care was appropriate.
And the state needs to be opened.
Right. In order to gather the medical records, somebody needs to be appointed as your dad's administrator, all right? Or if he had a will, as his executor. And that person then has the legal authority to demand the medical records. Until the estate is raised down in City Hall, you don't or can't obtain the medical records. And so the first thing is to raise the estate, then gather up the medical records and then have them reviewed. So that's the process. And you have 2 years, 2 years from the date of his death to pursue that claim. And so and it takes a while to gather the records. It could take 3 to 6 months to gather the records, actually, and to do everything I just mentioned and to have them reviewed. So it's not something that you should delay. You should move next week and start that process. By all means, you can give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727. You'll talk to, we have a doctor on staff, actually, who will preliminarily review the claim with you. And then if we feel like there's merit to the claim, and if we feel like we might be able to help you, we'll take the next step and bring you in, and you'll meet with some attorneys who will help you raise that estate, and then we'll gather the records.
Well, thank you. Now, tell me, is there anybody I should ask for in particular, or just call the office and mention the phone call?
Yeah, just call the office, mention the phone call, and give them some facts about what happened, and they'll get you to the right person.
Well, thank you, and you all enjoy your holiday.
Thanks, Ever. You do the same. Thanks for calling Court Radio and listening.
I think the most the most common nursing home problem is bed sores and falls.
Yep.
But the glitch here, interesting issue that legally for you and I could tell your eyes sort of raised a little, was the intervening hospitalization, because there's a independent party sort of providing treatment and checking it out, and they did release him back to the nursing home. So the question becomes, you know, how bad was the situation?
And
they did send him to the hospital to take care of it, so... You
know, they recognized a problem.
They recognized it, right.
And they sent him to the appropriate source, and then that source turned around and sent him back after just a couple days. So clearly, if there's a case here, it's going to be against the hospital and maybe even a little, you know, the hospital may be even a little bit more responsible, but certainly both of them. And what people have to understand also is that when you're dealing with these situations, if the victim is, you know, 97 years old and has all kinds of other health issues that are complicating the case, it becomes very difficult to kind of tease out what was the cause of his death.
Yep.
And was it from negligence or was it from natural causes? And so, you know, typically these cases where there are a lot of other issues at play, we don't end up pursuing. We don't end up choosing to investigate. But when somebody is relatively healthy and they have a quick demise because of some negligence, well, then of course, merely because they're in a nursing home doesn't mean that they don't have a bona fide case. But you know, again, it depends on the individual facts, and we. And frankly, you know, and I say this with all sincerity, most of these alleged med mal calls, we do not pursue. We do not pursue those cases. But clearly, you know, every week there are cases that we think have some merit and ones we choose to get involved in. So, folks, if you have a medical malpractice case, if you're thinking that something was done wrong that caused injury or death, please give us a call at 215-227-2727. And we'll be right back after these sponsored announcements.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If your child was injured at birth, if you were the victim of a medical mistake, or if you were hurt in a workplace or automobile accident, choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. We've collected over $100 million for our clients, and we won't stop until your future is secure. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning, Court Radio listeners, and welcome to another episode of Court Radio. I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, David Rappaport.
Hello, hello.
Hi,
good
Dave.
Morning.
Good morning. Folks, we've been bantering about some stories, and we've been talking to listeners who have some really interesting legal questions. And one of the stories, David, that we hadn't gotten to in the first half was a nice jury verdict in Pennsylvania on the other side of the state this time in Allegheny County, mm-hmm. or commonly referred to as Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh area.
Yes. And there, a jury of our peers, folks, people just like you and me, gave a verdict against the Elks Lodge for $28 million. $28 million for the death of someone named Jessica Trail, 24, young lady. She was riding, and she was struck head-on by another vehicle, and her boyfriend had sustained serious and severe injuries and eventually succumbed to his injuries 7 months later. So it was a catastrophic accident. The driver of the other car was Timothy Lesko of Munhall, Pennsylvania. And he pleaded guilty to drunken driving and was serving a 2 to 4 year sentence.
Right.
Which doesn't seem like all that much to me, but he had a .226 blood alcohol level, almost three times the legal limit of .08. And Timothy had been drinking at a Pittsburgh Elks Lodge. And one of those, they had one of those, like a beef and beer. And you pay $25 and you have unlimited beer and nobody's watching. They have kegs.
Yeah, apparently there were kegs outside of the lodge too. So no one could even see how many people were drinking and how much they were drinking.
Right. And you got a cup and you just got to fill your cup until your cup runneth over. And Timothy came out drunk okay, caused devastation.
Right. Now, the question that many people may ask is, why $28 million? Why is it so much? I think a portion of that was punitive damages.
Could be.
I'm pretty sure it was. I read that. And what disturbed me greatly about this story was I saw it in the when it first happened on, you know, the legal sources, and there was a lot of sources where, you know, like where you can make comments on the bottom, people can comment. And the first four comments that I read on the one source that I had read this story on Thursday or Friday, people were making comments of, you know, oh, this is ridiculous, another runaway jury giving, you know, $28 million, how, you know, for a business, that what responsibility does the business have? It's the guy's responsibility for drinking. And, you know, it really strikes me as just such a short-sighted way of looking at things. And most people just don't understand the legal system and how it works and what it's geared for.
I'd like to hear from our listeners. This, you know, based on a description of the story as I gave it,
yeah.
Do you think that the jury was misguided by awarding $28 million? Do you think that they should have awarded less or more? And was it fair to bring a claim against the Elks Lodge for their failure to supervise the drinking that day? You know, do you give a free pass to them because he, you know, Timothy, the perpetrator,
he's
an adult.
Yeah.
Did he, you know, was he the only one responsible for that accident? I guess that's the question. If you've got an opinion on that, David and I would love to hear from you. 215-227-2727. Let's talk to Angie from North Philly. Hey, Angie, welcome to Court Radio.
Angie.
Keep going.
I should know all the words to that Rolling Stone song, but I don't.
And if Kyle was on his game, he'd be playing that song right now.
You should have that queued up already. How dare. Angie. Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, enough of that, David. Angie's gone. Bye-bye.
All right.
She can call back, I guess. You know, we'll take her call again.
Why did you hang up?
Okay, David.
So quickly.
I'm going to bring a claim against you shortly. There'll be a lawsuit for the assault to my ears.
Assault on people's ears.
215-227-2727. Getting back to that story.
Yes.
You know, it reminds me that this time of the year, our listeners have liability, and I want to make sure that they understand their liability. You know, we have parties, house parties, and Kyle has house parties all the time. And you know,
he always supplies, you know, beverages and doesn't supervise and, you know,
cooking. He's cooking like crazy, and he's got the wine going. Wine in a box. That's, you know, Kyle.
That's. And then what? Wait. And then he lays on the ground and flicks the spout and just has the wine pour into his mouth.
Kyle's a wine in the box kind of guy. Okay.
Hey, you know what? Nowadays, there's some good wine that's in a box.
Oh,
I hate to say.
Okay. Well, I stopped drinking wine 16 years ago, so I wouldn't know. But wine in a box, and he's got these parties going, and people are drinking. Does Kyle have responsibility like the Elks Lodge, David?
Yes. He does. No, I know he does.
Kyle doesn't.
I want to make him feel like he does, though, because he should.
He does under one circumstance.
Yeah.
If Kyle serves a minor,
right,
then Kyle's going to be responsible 100% for whatever damages come to the minor or that the minor causes. Folks, if you've got high school kids and they're in your house and they're drinking,
right,
any amount, there's zero tolerance. Any amount.
Any minor, right. The reason the Elks Lodge is responsible is because they're selling. They're making money from it, and
right,
the law is different for them. You know, so. But you know, the other issue I wanted to bring up about the that people don't realize in the story, and I like to say this, you know, I want to say this to people because they don't realize it. In Pennsylvania, we attorneys are not allowed to mention to juries when we have a case like this that the Elks Lodge was insured and that they have insurance and that we are asking for compensation to the victims out of the insurance coverage. So many juries always think, oh my God, you know, we can't give a large verdict because it'll put this company out of business.
The Elks Lodge. It'll close the Elks Lodge down.
Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But the reason it's so high is in this case, the jury doesn't know there's insurance or not. It's a punishment. It's punitive damages was part of this. I think the compensatory damages was somewhere around half of that, and the rest was punitive.
Now, unfortunately, they found someone outrageous.
Unfortunately,
most insurance policies, folks, don't cover punitive damages. So the compensatory part, the part to make you whole from the damages you were caused, will be paid by insurance. The part punitive, that won't.
Right. So before you get outraged at the $28 million, you need to get the facts straight as to what actually will be paid out. Number one, right? And this is just like the McDonald's case. Everyone heard the McDonald's case, the famous case. Oh, my God, you got so much money. No one knew the facts of the case. And now...
Well, let's talk to Larry from Wilmington, Delaware. It's our first call from our little friends in Wilmington. Okay. Hey, Larry, you've got an opinion on this verdict?
Yes. I think the amount of money given out was justifiable. I think it sends out a signal to all places that you just can't let somebody's cup run up over. I think the guy is getting off easy. He got a year for each life he took.
I know.
Yeah, no kidding.
But somewhere somebody has to pay.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right. He got off the best out of all of them, right?
Yeah. 2 years, and he probably will get out for good behavior in less time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is... an unfortunate outcome
sure.
for him.
Personal responsibility certainly plays into it, and he should be held accountable, no question. Doesn't sound like he was really slapped on the back, and that's it.
Yeah. You know, I hope that he, maybe spends the rest of his life advocating for, the evils of drinking and driving and being an advocate on behalf and maybe saving lives. Maybe in the end he'll save lives. Let's hope for that.
Exactly.
All right, Larry, thanks for giving us a call from Wilmington, Delaware. Have a great Sunday, and thanks for listening to Court Radio.
You guys, too. Thank you for being there.
All right. Yeah, I that's our first caller in favor of the verdict, and I would be surprised if many of our listeners were against that verdict. But, you know, you bring up a great point, David, and that is our listeners should know that, yeah, sometimes you do.
Of course I do.
Occasionally.
Yeah, all right. About insurance?
Our listeners should know that even though we're precluded, we're our lips are sealed, they won't let us talk about this at trial, that you should know that no lawyer is bringing a case when there's not an insurance policy and deep pocket. So you're never, the person who's standing before you, the defendant, is never going to reach into their own pocket to pay a verdict.
Usually. And when you say deep pocket, let's not mistake that to mean the lawyers are going after it just because they have a lot of money. They're an insurance company. They're willing deep pocket. They're right. That's
they're
the,
in
business.
The business.
They sold a policy to cover this type of incident.
Yeah.
So let's not feel sorry for them when they have to pay it out.
No, they take money in so that they can pay money out.
Billions they take in, by the way.
Let's talk to Claudia. Claudia from North Philly, line 5, Kyle.
Hey,
hi, Claudia.
My question is that me and my mom got the same name. 2002, I had claimed, I appealed Social Security for getting me that $20 I would get every month with it, but because it kept going down, so I appealed it. But what happened was they granted me the money, but they sent it to my mother. She told them that she didn't know nobody named Claudia. So therefore, she went to legal aid, and they granted her my Social Security. I want to know, is it a pending where can I go to a lawyer and let them look this up? Because when I tried to go to the bank, they said that was it was too long ago for me to pull it up from the bank.
So you're talking about a single, Claudia,
to get it.
Claudia, you're talking about a single transaction, or has she been getting a check every month for years?
She's still getting my check, and I haven't got it yet.
Why don't you go to Social Security would be the first
part. Well, I told them the same thing, and they told me I had to have proof.
Proof what? That you're the person who should be getting the check?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They said I had to have proof, and it's been going on since 2002. And I moved where, I don't know if they had sent me letters or whatever, but only way I found out was because she slipped up because she was intoxicated. and we was talking about something else, and she the one that told on herself.
Okay, well, you in Social Security, you have a Social Security number. That number is different than Mom's Social Security number, okay? I mean, they don't go by names. They go by numbers.
That's right. I understand that. But when I went to legal aid and told her the situation.
Wait a minute. Go to Social Security. Don't go to legal aid and look at your file. And you have a file.
Apparently, it was put under the mother's number. That's what happened, right?
Yeah, well, that's what they took and did. They start putting it underneath her number, and she's still getting it.
Well,
the point is, what I'm saying, I went to Social Security, I went to legal aid where she went, and they told me they couldn't represent me because they represented her.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And they sent me a letter to go somewhere else, and he told me I would have to be paying the money back. And I said, that can't be so.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense. The whole thing doesn't make sense.
That's what I said, too, and I just walked out, but... I'm looking for a lawyer to appeal this. I know it's something that got to be done.
Well, here's the deal. I have a lawyer that, it isn't Jeff because there's, I have a Social Security lawyer who I can refer you to. And,
okay, well, thank you. Let me get a pen.
No. You're going to give us a call tomorrow and you're going to ask for my office manager, Dina, and Dina will give you the number for the Social Security lawyer we're going to refer you to. So give us a call tomorrow, 215, same number you called today, 227-2727.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Claudia.
And they can help me.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. They
thank you so much.
All right.
I appreciate you. My prayers have been answered.
There you go, Claudia. That's what
we
do, David.
Have a good, blessful day. And
thank you.
I just want to say thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Peace. Yeah, David.
Yes.
We answer prayers occasionally. All right. Occasionally. Let's talk to Ms. Bennett from West Philly. Hey, Ms. Bennett, welcome to Court Radio.
Hello.
Hi. Ms. Bennett.
Hello.
Ms. Bennett.
Hi, this is me. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Lower your radio.
Yes, so my problem is I have a problem. They just put my teenager, my baby daughter up for adoption without my permission through the family court to 1801 Vine. They stopped my parental rights and my visitation rights. She's 17 now. I want to know how I'm going to get her out of adoption. Mess of pain.
Well, wow. Kudos for the quick delivery and saving us time, but.
Whoa,
do you understand what that?
That was a speed reader.
That was speed reading.
All right, so she has a 17-year-old daughter right. that she wants to get emancipated so that she doesn't get adopted by somebody else, I think is what she was saying. And in order to get emancipated, your daughter has to seek emancipation. You don't do that for her. And she would file a petition for emancipation with the family court. It's hard to believe that they're going to allow adoption of a 17-year-old.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, before you know it, she's going to be, 18, and she's going to be as old as Kyle. She won't be able to be adopted. I would say that, emancipation has to be raised. Well, it can be raised by a parent. A parent, you got to really, a kid who's like a bad kid, like you
want to cut ties with your
cut and run.
Bad egg, yeah.
Yeah. Then you can do a forced emancipation.
Not easy.
No, it's not easy. and the court's not going to, in this circumstance, is not going to do it with the circumstances that she raised. Speed reader, I would say thanks for calling Court Radio. I think that, I don't think we're going to be able to give you advice on this one.
Call back again. Wait a minute. Call back again when you have another question. Goodbye.
All right. Let's talk to Donna, who has a security deposit issue in New Jersey. Hi, Donna. Oh, Donna. Well, Kyle,
we're having problems with the phone today. What's going on? Donna.
Hello.
Hey,
I'm here.
Okay. Right. Hello.
Hi.
What's your question?
Can you hear me?
We do.
We hear you fine. What's your question?
When you talk to me.
Yes, morning. I have a question about a security deposit. I moved out of a property from 2009, and I have seek correspondence with the landlord through their office manager as far as, I moved. I was moving. We agreed that I was moving, and I was finding another place to live.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. When in 2009? When in 2000?
May of 2009.
Okay, so you're beyond 4 years at this point.
Okay.
Which
I didn't know there was any statute of limitations because I seek legal aid to find out if there is any in Jersey, and if there is, what is the actual, you know, time frame. And they want to give me a pamphlet of papers, and it has nothing with a time frame in there.
Yeah, well, there's a 4-year statute of limitations on most contract actions.
Okay.
And you're beyond 4 years. What caused? I just have a question. What, I mean, 4 years is a long time. What caused you to wait 4 years?
I've actually been corresponding with them in 2010, 2009, 2011, and I never got the office manager. One time I did get her. She was very nasty and mean. I gave her my address and stuff. I even left it on their machine so they could give me back the correspondence if there's any damages, what was the damages, and if they were keeping any of my security deposit, you know, so I'll be relieved that, okay, they were keeping it due to blah, 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 blah. And if I didn't do any of those damages, I was going to appeal that, no, you're not keeping my security deposit because there were no damages. I haven't gotten anything back from them. I gave them correspondence and nothing, pretty much, it's been just sitting. And I needed to know, that's what I really called, because I was like,
okay,
have I received any correspondence, if there's any limitations.
Here's the limitations according to David. You may be still in luck. There may be a six year statute of limitations
for contracts
in New Jersey. In Pennsylvania, it's 4 years. So most of our listeners, it's 4 years. But in New Jersey, it may be extended to 6 years. We have general statutes of limitations also in Pennsylvania that could go out to 6 years, depending on the circumstances. But in any event, if it's 6 years in New Jersey and David is correct, then you still have 2 years. But, you know, just file suit already. I mean, stop calling them and just... You know, you go to the district court in the district in which the landlord or the property is, and if you have a $2,000 security deposit, just sue him for $2,000. Tell him you never got the money back and he owes it to you, and that would get you into court. I think you should have reached the point at this point of no return. I mean, the time for talking is over. You need to file the lawsuit. And that way, you'll let a judge decide it.
Okay, right.
Just file. Just file the lawsuit. Just, you know, if it, every county, every area has a district justice who's responsible, and you're going to just file a lawsuit, you know, your name versus whoever the company is, the realtor. Right. And however much it is, and you'll file the lawsuit, and you know, your story is not unusual. I mean, landlords have a duty to list the damages within a short period of time after you're leaving. They have to inspect it and list the damages and tell you what they're holding and why. If they haven't done that, then they really can't even claim damages after that. It's very difficult for them, if they haven't provided you with a list to your, you know, last known address. If they haven't provided you with a list, when you left that facility, that home, that apartment, yes, did you give them your forwarding address?
I called. That's the reason why I did the call. I called and gave them my P.O. box, which is still up and running to this day, because I kept it open just in case, like you said, you know, once I found out the statute of limitation, they can't say they couldn't find me or they couldn't send me forwarding address.
So
when I was leaving, I opened a P.O. box.
Perfect. So you've given them, it's perfect, you've given them an address. And they didn't respond, and I think that you're entitled to your money back. But obviously, they're not going to voluntarily give it to you, and probably it's not enough to warrant retaining an attorney over, because it would cost more to send an attorney out with you to a hearing than it's worth. So, and you know, in the United States, we all pay for our own legal fees, even when we're right, even when the other side ends up having to pay us. They don't have to pay you for legal fees, unless, of course, it's in the contract. If you read your contract and it said that the winning party would pay the legal fees of the losing party, then you might want to retain an attorney. But if it's not in there, then I'd say you're best off just filing suit for yourself. All right? Thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday. All right, David, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We got a million callers, and we've got questions to answer right after this sponsored break.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident? With your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been the victim of a medical mistake, getting proper care matters. Understanding your rights matters. And getting just compensation that provides for your future matters. That's why your attorney matters. If you're suffering because of a serious medical mistake, call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. Choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Hey, 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 it's Dean Weitzman, joined by my co-host, David M. Rappaport.
Hey, hey, we are here.
Let's jump right back in, Davey.
Okay, let's go.
Let's talk to Monica from Newark, Delaware. Good morning, Monica, and welcome to Court Radio.
It's Newark.
Good morning, how are you?
Newark.
Newark.
Hi, Monica.
Hello.
You have a question?
Yes, I have a question. I want to know about the statutory in Wilmington, Delaware. A situation happened, occurred with my daughter.
What kind of situation?
Well, she went to Planned Parenthood. I think it was like sometime last year, and she had a procedure done. And they did like an abortion procedure. And when she was under anesthesia, they had put her under anesthesia. They sat her in the waiting room, and they were waiting for the anesthesia to kick in. So when the anesthesia kicked in, they called her back to perform the procedure. While they were performing preparing to perform the procedure, she told them that she was very hot. So one of the nurses in the room took an ice pack out of the freezer and put it on her back. They pursued on with the procedure, and after the procedure was done, they took the ice pack off her back, which left a scar, like a purple scar on her back. So when she got home, she was telling me that her back was hurting. So when I looked on her back, it's like a big purple spot on her back. I immediately rushed her to Christiana Hospital, and they said she had frostbite.
Okay,
so
here's
called the lawyer.
Here's the answer to your question, all right? Now, the answer is 2 years. 2 years from the date of the negligence in Delaware, you can pursue a medical malpractice claim. 2 years. That's the answer. All right?
Okay, because I later on found out that the entire staff was fired.
Doesn't matter.
When did it happen?
It happened like a little less than a year, like 11 months ago.
And okay,
all
right.
The entire staff, it was all over the news, was fired.
Well, then you're good. You have another year left before you can, you know. You should act on it immediately.
But, remember that when we talk about medical malpractice, okay, you're going to be hard-pressed to find an attorney who's willing to pursue a claim unless there are substantial damages. Even the claim as you describe it, you're going to have to prove the claim. And it's not enough to say, well, they were all fired. Or
they'll still make you prove it.
Yeah.
Even though there's ample evidence and they'll even almost admit it, they're going to make you go through everything.
And the cost to go through everything is significant. And so, if it ends up being a matter where your daughter made a full recovery after a short period of time, then probably even though there was negligence, you may have a hard time finding somebody who's willing to pursue it because the cost of litigating it may exceed the value of the case. But we thank you for calling Court Radio, and we're glad we were able to help you with your 2-year statute of limitations on MedMal in Delaware, which is the same in Pennsylvania and the same in New Jersey. All right, let's move along here, David.
Yes.
Let's talk to Lily. Lily from North Philly. Yo, Lily, how are you?
I'm good, and you? How are you?
We're well, thanks. You've got a question. What is it?
It's a workman comp claim.
Uh-huh.
I just was approved for my claim, but I'm having a problem with my attorney as far as the third party. He hasn't filed it, and each time I keep asking him why he hasn't filed it, he really didn't give me an answer to that. Could you explain to me when the process of filing the workman comp as well as the third party shouldn't have been filed together?
Okay. So you really have two independent claims. You have a workers' compensation claim, and you have a case possibly of third-party negligence. You can't sue. You can't sue your employer, and so this third-party negligence has to be against somebody other than your employer or a coworker. And if you have that circumstance where there's another party, not your employer, not your coworker, who caused you to sustain the injury you sustained, then you'd be entitled to recover for your pain and suffering from that party, in addition to getting your wages and medical from your employer's carrier for your workers' comp. They're independent, and you have a 2-year statute of limitations on the third-party case. And usually, you don't pursue a third-party case. You could begin the investigation. I mean, we begin investigations right at the time of the injury, but we don't actually submit it for settlement or file a lawsuit or pursue it in any way, shape, or form until we know what our client's injuries are. That usually takes some time sorting that out. He may be doing that investigation, or he may not. And some attorneys only do workers' comp, and they are not really adept at doing third-party claims. So you have to figure all that out. Go ahead.
This attorney does both, and what happens is I was approved for the workman comp, and he told me he'll be filing the third party after the hearing was over.
Okay.
That was 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard anything. When I called him back, he said he hasn't filed it just yet. So could he be just waiting? I don't know.
Well, let me ask you something. What was your date of your injury?
The 10th of September last year.
Okay, so you've got a year already into it. Yeah, something should be happening. You got to contact the attorney and get them moving. And if you're not happy, you can always move attorneys. So, you know, you're not bound by that relationship. If you want to move on, especially with the third-party claim, you can give us a call at 215-227-2727. But first, I'd try to give this guy a chance to get back on the stick. Okay?
Well, that did happen because I had another attorney call him, and he had me to sign a CR agreement without my knowledge of it because I didn't know the legal terms of the CR agreement. He told me I was signing for this third party.
Okay. Well, here's what you need to do. You need to give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727 because, unfortunately, we're all out of time. We just can't answer the question any further. And so give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727, and I'll get to the bottom of it and give you the best advice I possibly can. Have a great Sunday. Folks, thanks for listening to Court Radio. We'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.